Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And today we're going to turn back a little bit. We've been lingering on and relishing a couple of our San Francisco meals. And so we're going to turn our attention to two of our most favorite restaurants and two of our most favorite people, a chef and a sommelier. And what else, Rabideau?
And they just happen to own two restaurants side by side in the Jackson Square District in San Francisco, one that previously existed in another place called Quince. We've had Michael Tusk from Quince on the program before. And when we knew he moved to a new place, we knew we had to go there because we knew it would be great.
It is great.
I don't think we realized just exactly how great it was going to be when we were planning it, but that just made it all the more exciting. And not only that, but with space next door, Michael and his wife Lindsay decided to open a more casual place called Cotonia.
And that also was a hit. Everybody loves
absolute,
it.
Absolute smash hit. Open for both lunch and dinner, more casual atmosphere. Quince is only open for dinner and is definitely, you know, dress-up fine dining. But the fun part about it is that chef and owner with his wife Lindsay, Michael Tusk, is such a wonderful man, such a really nice person, such an absolutely incredibly talented and innovative chef. And added to his team, since we were there in San Francisco at Quince for the first time, David Lynch, uber sommelier and great expert on Italian wines, joined the Quince Cotonia team. I guess it was probably about 6 or 9 months ago. So we couldn't wait to find out what that meant for wine tasting and a new wine program altogether at what already was a very fine program. So we had the opportunity to interview Michael about Quince and Cotonia from a food standpoint and from a location standpoint and all that stuff. And then we thought, well, what fun it would be if we could capture the essence of the creation of a tasting menu that we ate and the pairing of wines that we drank together with that. So sometime after we got back from San Francisco, we managed to catch up with Michael and David together. And we had them talk through this wonderful dining and wining experience. So both of those put together side by side in this program. So first of all, an interview about the whole concept of Quince and Cotonia with Chef Michael Tusk. And then in the second part of the program, real-time reliving of what a fine dining and wining experience is all about. So before we get underway with all that, let's just take a commercial break, and then we'll be right back with our interview with Michael about Quince and Cotonia, the restaurants.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
We're going to be talking to Michael Tusk, and we're talking to David Lynch, and we're in San Francisco, and we're at Cotonia, which is the new restaurant, and we're going to then also talk to you about Quince, which has a reincarnation. We have a lot of ground to cover, Michael. Do you think we should start with the meal we just had, which was fabulous?
Love to talk about the meal that you just had. Thanks for coming to San Francisco again.
I just learned that Cotonia is sort of an abbreviated translated to Quince. I didn't know what it meant.
Correct. We've got Quince on one side, so we were trying to open the new restaurant. So we just thought, like, Quince in Italian. We just dropped the Mela Cotonia.
Mela Cotonia.
You know, Cotonia. And, you know, we just made it a little bit easier for folks to remember.
Now, the concept here is rustic Italian.
Correct.
Right.
Very.
Is that your background? What is your background? I mean, what style cooking? I thought you did.
No, I've spent your time in restaurants that were very about you know, what was coming really from the marketplace, and then spent time in Italian kitchens and in French kitchens. So I think I can go back and forth between the two, but Cotonia is definitely a little bit more straightforward, Italian-oriented. There's a large Universo grill rotisserie unit that came from a small manufacturer.
That's handsome. I went and stood and watched it as though it were a video.
Yeah, it was that was really special to get that. David actually did most of the bargaining with a gentleman outside of Florence. So,
well, you know what's interesting is I spoke to the fellow on the phone several times, very late at night here because of the time change, and we had a couple of fairly fruitful conversations in Italian, and then at a certain point I struggled with the word chimney. I couldn't remember the word for chimney because we wanted to order the unit without a chimney. Most of these ovens are used, they're grills that are used outside. The only hookup on the whole thing is the electric for the spit. And so I was trying to tell him, you know, senza, and I couldn't remember the word. And he said, do you mean the chimney? And I said, well, wait a minute, you speak the Queen's English all this time? Why didn't we could have handled this in two phone calls instead of six? So it was a good one, you know, very classic Italian. He said, well, you were doing okay, so I figure we continue like this. You know, so that's how
very Italian.
That's
yeah.
A little story about the universo that I was involved in.
Well, now, of course, you are the ultimate wine guru here in this group. And, Michael, how did you get him to come to the West Coast? He's an East Coast person.
Well,
last seen at Bavo.
No,
last seen at John Doria.
We're both East Coast
people,
so, you know, we had that East Coast connection. Just David had been at the restaurant. I'd been out, you know, when he was at Bavo and met him there. And then we've got some friends that, you know, there's a lot of people in the restaurant business out this way. And then my wife was out in New York, and she connected with him. And then we knew that he was a big, you know, surfer also. So we got him out here to the West Coast.
Oh, so you were a surfer.
Yeah, he goes a lot of time to Santa Cruz and rides the waves and stuff.
Maybe someday. My brother-in-law surfs, actually. I was been hoping.
Now, we're not going to talk to your wife, Lindsay, who's a co-owner of all this and works frantically at it because she's shy, right?
Oh, people actually used to think that I was the shy one, whereas I was just kind of busy in the kitchen, so I didn't really have time to be gallivanting around the dining room. So I try to go out and speak to customers, since I do enjoy conversations with them about just life in general or food or their experience at either one of the two restaurants. But no, she's not shy. I'm not shy. She just works a lot. She's
very busy, because I have to say, this place for lunch on a Monday, it was totally packed. Everybody having a fabulous time. People raving about the food, which we can do also. It was just wonderful. We had some really interesting dishes. Maybe you could talk to us a little bit about. Start off with, tell us about how you organized this menu.
We just wanted the restaurant to be very a little bit different than other restaurants, just really changing a lot. But I wanted it to be a restaurant that was open throughout the entire day. Not really a closure during the middle of the afternoon, just kind of keep on going.
Yeah, because it kept busy.
Yeah, just very, I wanted it to be a restaurant where if you come, you know that you'll get a lot of different changing food, not just like seasonally, but almost on like a daily basis and kind of, shake things up there rather than, just have somebody come in for the season. There's a menu. So we've got the section that's like a little fixed price lunch that you can have for three courses. That changes a lot. And then we also have the specials, the Del Giorno section on the bottom.
Right, which I had one of those, the sea scallops with artichokes, potatoes, mint, and pancetta, and it was wonderful. The scallops are gorgeous. Where are they from?
Those are East Coast scallops. I try to buy as much, you know, fish and shellfish from the West Coast, but at the same time, customers get a little tired of eating Monterey Bay squid and sardines and sole. And
I had the squid too.
And rockfish too. It's like there's a lot going on these waters on the West Coast. But being an East Coast guy, I like to bring in some product. And I was a big fan of the scallop. So that wasn't on the menu the other day. We also have an interaction between the two restaurants in which we still buy a lot of whole animals. We've got some whole calves that arrived today, the lambs, the pigs. They're all, you know, we use everything, so we try to like work the whole animals into the program between the two restaurants. And one day, you know, Quince may be using some cuts, and the other day we'll use different cuts over on Catania. So it's a nice interaction where there's two separate kitchens, but we'll do a lot of the work in the Quince kitchen, like we made the mortadella and the chicharrón. And we're making some other salumi products, and we'll do that over in the Quince kitchen.
You make your own salumi?
Yeah, we're just getting that kind of started. We didn't really have a lot of space for it when we first got open, but now that we've got a little bit more hanging room for some of the products, we started that. And it's the weather's cold right now, so it's a good time to like make salumi.
Let's see, I had the Monterey Bay squid, which is West Coast, with grapefruit and puntarella, which was beautifully done. The puntarella, I mean, you only get it the right way in Rome, and it was really nicely done.
That's like a good example of what the restaurant's about. All the puntarella we get from a friend of mine who's a big chicory farmer from La Tercera Farm. She's in Petaluma. It's a friend of mine named Annabelle Lunderink. So I have a connection with her, and I get as much of, her chicories, and other, she's a big shelling bean farmer in the summer. And, I've known her for many years. So whatever she gives me, I pretty much take. And then she's a friend of the restaurant. And that's the way I kind of want this restaurant to be. If a mushroom, somebody foraging mushrooms comes in, in the back door, like they're doing this time of year, since there's a lot of wild mushrooms around, you'll see porcinis on the menu that day. Or we have some candy caps that came in today. We had some oyster mushrooms that also came in today, and hedgehog. So it should be driven by what's around here locally. And then we just try to adapt to that. Like the porcini may end up on a pizza or a pasta.
Harvey Steinman from Wine Spectator was sitting right next to us. He said, "Mike, that Michael Tusk makes the best pasta in the world." And how did you figure out how to do that?
That's a good question. I thank him for saying that.
it's a compliment.
We're always experimenting, playing around with some different combinations, both flavor profiles and the way that we're making the pasta. We make a lot of interesting doughs that have different percentages of different flours, and then just a lot of really high quality eggs. We don't use a lot of whites and a lot of the ribbon noodles, and we basically make them every day and just try to have some fun with it rather than doing the same old dishes. We're always trying to kind of
yeah, you've got who heard of pizza with wild nettle, egg, and pecorino? I really wanted to have that, but I had too much to eat.
Well, you can come back tonight for dinner.
Right. Okay, presented with this menu then, David, did you know that you were just going to go for Italian wines?
Yeah, well, the short answer is yes. Cotogna is obviously a more resolutely Italian restaurant than Quince is.
Yeah, well, we can talk about the difference.
And even though Quince, I think, has an Italian soul, the fact that it doesn't have an Italian name, and that the pasta section is what sort of anchors it in Italy, but there's a lot of other technique happening, a lot of other local products happening, a real California and French influence to that menu, whereas Cotogna is obviously innovative and its own expression of these things. It's not just taking a literal interpretation of this, whatever the grandma recipe is, and putting it out there and so, this is from so-and-so. But it's a very authentic and more resolutely Italian menu than Quince.
What did you aim for in terms of your Italian?
Well, our main premise here was value. That was the something to be emphasized on the menu side too. The value inherent in this place is what drives it. That's why it's full, because it's food that really over delivers at that price point. There's pastas here for 15, 16, but what is it, 16? That for that price point completely over deliver at that price.
Yeah,
and so it's not about just putting cheap food on the plate and having like a cheap trattoria to support the fancy restaurant next door.
Now lamb, pappardelle. The lamb was done first in that exotic stove of yours.
Mm-hmm. The lamb was actually from the right next to the Universo rotisserie grill in the wood burning oven. What we do with that is at the end of service, we'll use all the riblets and shanks and shoulders, and we'll then get a base of like onion, and you're starting to see a little bit of new garlic around right now, rosemary, olive oil, a little bit of tomato, and then we basically just like make a base for the lamb, and then we put that in the oven with a little foil over it and a little bit of wine rubbed on the lamb, and then we pop it in the oven for 3 hours, and then when the oven's kind of cooling down, it just braises naturally inside of there, and then we pick it and we put it back into the juices. So nothing on the menu is very very complicated.
I have to really emphasize the fact that everything tastes so good. There's this emphasis on flavor here. I mean, really good techniques as well, but I mean, the flavors are what really drive the success, I think, of the rent. Could you contrast this menu, Cotogna, with Quince? I mean, which is a switch from a more rustic Italian to a more fine dining, broader
The best example would be like on the Quinn side, when one of the two tasting menus, there's like a buckwheat tortelli, and basically we've taken like the pizza okery, and which has, you know, the buckwheat pasta, but it's usually done in a little bit more rustic fashion with potatoes and cabbage and the Beto cheese, and we kind of like, we made a filling with the potatoes, the Savoy cabbage, and we put that inside the filled pasta and just kind of put a little twist. You still get the same flavor profile, but it's done with like some, at this time with some black, winter truffles, Melanosporum, and it's just done in a little bit more elegant fashion where that's what this side of the restaurant is about. Whereas if I did that dish on the Catania side, I would definitely maybe bake the pasta, bake it all together in the oven in a gratin dish, or do it in just much more rustic fashion. So one side, I'm still shooting for flavor profiles, but you're trying to make the food a little bit more, how do I say this, personal? A little, just, you know, technique.
Is there a difference in clientele between Catania and Quinn's?
I think Dave and I see a lot of the
same people,
same folks, because we've never been open for lunch before. So you see a lot of clientele that normally would be here at night that either work in the area. They're here, and you know, it's not just it's families, it's large parties. You know, they may eat at Quince one night a week, and you know, a different night of the week.
Well, lunchtime was definitely celebrations, but that sort of relates to the season as well.
Yeah. No, it's very. I see a lot of, you know, late night diners. We're open kind of later on the weekends, and we stay open fairly late on the weekdays, where I think we just wanted to give the guest a choice on where to go. Whereas in the past, if I don't want to say, you know, if you're a fine dining restaurant, you get pigeonholed as being a certain kind of price point. I felt like if you're not comfortable in one restaurant, then you have a choice of just, you know, walking outside and going down to the restaurant on the corner, or if you don't like either one, you can, you know, walk over to Chinatown or wherever you want to go to. But at least we've given the guests an option that, you know, I think a lot of restaurateurs get put in a position where you become something. Sometimes you don't really know. Like, I never knew we were going to become a fine dining restaurant on the other location. It just kind of, and then you go with what is going on around you, and people seem to want a certain something that I tried to deliver on. Whereas now it's very, I feel like, it's very easy. You just, you know, if you want to have something a little bit more elegant, then you can come to one side. If you want to just something very straightforward and a little bit louder.
It's not exactly straightforward. It's really delicious and creative at the same time. And David, how does it go? You don't have any pressure to just do the standard California wine things?
No, none. I mean, I was hired. I mean, my original mandate, if you want to go back to the early sort of conversations with Lindsay and Michael, they were all about Italianing up a wine list that at the time followed what I would call the kind of standard San Francisco fine dining template, where there was a lot of French influence. There was obviously a lot of California. There wasn't as much Italian. And you know, I'll give you an example of, I think, I mean, if I had to sort of say why I was hired, I'll give you an example from today. I walked in after a weekend. I saw that he put the buckwheat tortelli with Beto cheese, cabbage, and black truffle. And with my background, I know what that is. I know that that's a fine dining week of pizzoccheri from Valtellina. And I immediately started scouring the cellar for whether or not I had enough Valtellina Superiore to pair with that dish. Because I know that's where Mike's heart is particularly northern Italy, but Italy in general. Obviously, California is a big, you know, Chez Panisse guy, local produce, great relationships with farmers. But whether it's Quince or Cotogna, the first sort of mission is to try to give some Italian identity to the wine list. And we did
that.
Well,
you certainly have done that.
Well, the Cotogna list is very straightforward. It is a prefix wine list, which is not an original idea, but it's an idea that's going over extremely well in the short term here, where every wine on the list is $40. So we've removed that part of the wine decision-making process, the price part. If you're comfortable with 40, then it's just a matter, you know.
I didn't know that.
Well, I think, I don't know if it's a trend. I mean, no one else is doing it in San Francisco that I know about.
Oh, so it's not a trend.
And so right now the list is all Italian. I'm very open to including some American Californian in particular, wines on the list. I'm not opposed to it at all. Right now it's all Italian, and I see us folding in some American wines that sort of embrace the spirit of the restaurant, if not necessarily the letter of Italian. I'm not a huge fan of California Sangiovese, for example, but there are a lot of wines in this market in California that really embrace the kind of what I would call Mediterranean spirit of what's going on in Cotonia. There's one that we've been serving in Quince for a while from Mikunti up in Dry Creek. It's a blend that's sort of white Chateauneuf inspired, actually, but it could work beautifully in Quince. It's got Grenache Blanc, Vermentino, and Uni Blanc, or not Uni Blanc, Picpoul, excuse me. And it's a wonderful sort of interpretation. It's Californian, but it has that sort of French soul to it. It's really wonderful, and it could easily work in Quince. So I'm not limiting it to Italian, but it's Italian right now, and people are really enjoying bouncing around to unfamiliar varieties, not being price sensitive about it, just trying stuff. And you were in there today. Now, I don't know how much of it is a product of the season, but everyone was drinking wine in there today.
Oh, yeah, they were.
You know, and that's wonderful. That's what it's about. So Cotonia, we all get a chance to just kind of like relax and not freak out so much about everything. Quince, obviously, is a little more intense. It's a little more serious. It's a little more really trying to hit something right on the head and make it perfect, whether it's a wine pairing, whether it's a dish, and sort of doing everything in a more involved and refined fashion.
And David, do you have something else going on called a winemaker in residence program?
We do. We continue to tweak that. You know, obviously it's the winemaker in residence program really started out as your sort of standard issue wine dinner, if you will, with a visiting producer in the marketplace. You know, these folks make their way to the different markets across the United States and try to get out and do work with their distributors. And whenever we can dovetail with someone interesting, we do that. We try to use it as an opportunity to hit them up for some older stuff too. You know, try to put the arm on them for some older wines. We try to do that.
That's a great idea.
So say, hey, we'll do a wine dinner with you and we're going to feature you and you can talk. And by the way, you got any 90 left? You know, that. So we try to do that. It's kind of a double-edged thing. And it's evolved into, and another example of what I think that Quince is all about and Cotonia. I mean, Mike is a super hands-on chef owner in what I would call the sort of Burgundian model, if anything. Think of like your sort of 2-3-star Michelin restaurants in the countryside where they're really living it. And, you know, quite frankly, I don't know if it's sustainable. He's still a young guy, but the way that he's pushing it, his menus on these two restaurants change daily.
This isn't
what you typically see in even some of the better fine dining restaurants in New York or Europe or anywhere. The level of sort of intimacy of his involvement with the food is really more comparable to a restaurateur somewhere in the country who's just really living it every day. It could be Spain, could be Italy, could be France, but someone who's that chef proprietor and that real like sort of, I mean, I think of Arzac as one example. I don't have a lot of experience dining in France, but in Italy, there's countless examples of people who just, they live it, and that's what he's doing. And so I too am like sort of on a daily basis challenged to find that Valtellina wine. And then I have to ask, hey, you're going to keep this on for a couple of days so I can order some wine to pair with it? I mean, you know.
You guys seem like you're having a great time now, huh?
I think it's hard to last in the restaurant business unless you enjoy yourself. And if
you work hard, you know, both of you.
There's too much work and too many things to do. And if you're not inspired, both in David's world of the wine cellar, or you know anything he's doing in collaboration with the kitchen, you're not gonna last too many years in the restaurant business unless you really enjoy what you're doing and you want to kind of push yourself. If you can't push yourself, then you're not gonna end up being able to you know push some your employees around you to really kind of try to go out on their own and you know start their own restaurants and really like do something special rather than it's just a job you should basically get out right now.
Let's do something before we conclude this. Let's pinpoint exactly where you are in San Francisco and also give relevant website information.
Okay. Well, we are in the historic Jackson Square neighborhood of San Francisco on the on Pacific Avenue. And the cross street is Montgomery. On the Montgomery side, you'll see Cotonia, and Quince is in the center on the Pacific Avenue side.
With a kitchen functioning, right, with the window on the
street. You can see... Yep, you can look right into the kitchen. You can see into the Cotonia kitchen, the spit and the wood oven, and then you could also see the action in the Quince kitchen. So
And your website?
The website is www.quincerestaurant.com and then catonia.com.
Well, I think it's catoniasf.com, isn't it?
Maybe you are correct.
Yes, says, I may be.
You're such a perfectionist.
I try. You know, I'm trying my best.
Anyhow, and this was just a revelation, this meal, and we just loved it. And love Quinn's, and, you know, we've been a fan of yours for quite a long time.
Well, I've been a fan of
and
yours also.
And also of yours,
thank
David.
You very much.
Thank you.
Got to do this more often.
Yeah.
Get you out to San Francisco more.
Yep.
In the intro, I should have mentioned that David Lynch also talked to us about Quince and Catonia as well, since he's instrumental in the wine program at both places. We had fun with his selection for what we had with lunch at Catonia the first time we went there. So he's just doing a wonderful job. And now I think it's time to
take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, welcome back, and now you're in for a real treat. This is the time when you can salivate all you want, and undoubtedly you will. So we're going to have Michael Tusk and David Lynch run through both the tasting menu and the wines paired with the menu, and you'll watch and see how exciting this whole thing is and how passionate these guys are.
And didn't they have a wonderful time sparring with each other as well. And we should record in the program itself that this is an absolute first for On the Menu after 8 years. It's the first time I think we've devoted an entire program to, I guess, two restaurants, but a single cooking and wine service team. It gives you an idea, I think, of how highly we at On the Menu think of Michael and Lindsay Tusk and David Lynch and Katrina, the general manager, and the entire staff at what is just one of this country's best dining establishments. And you can enjoy it, but be sure to have some food ready to hand, because you'll want to eat some as soon as you listen to this track. It will all make you so hungry. In fact, it made us hungry yesterday when we recorded the interview, and it's going to make us hungry again as we listen to it now.
Talk about a really perfect meal. We had just such a meal at Quince, and we're delighted to actually present the menu by Michael Tusk and the wine pairings by David Lynch. Welcome, guys.
Hello.
Thank you for
thanks
a wonderful meal.
My pleasure. Thanks for being here.
Who's going to start with the, what did we eat and why?
Chef starts and I follow. That's the way it goes.
Okay.
you started with a little Japanese octopus salad that was served with first of the season little Kishu mandarins, I think from Churchill Orchards in Ohio, and a little puntarelli with some Tchaska olive oil and a little bit of sea salt.
You have no idea how much I love puntarelli, by the way.
Excellent. Well, we've been inundated with it recently since a friend of mine grows it, and I got a lot of her crops, so it's nice to have it on the menu.
Oh, I love it. Love it.
Okay, so what did we do with that, David?
Well, we went somewhat heavily Italian on this menu, not entirely, but somewhat heavily. We started up in the Dolomites with Müller Thurgau from a producer named Poglieri Sandri. Müller Thurgau is kind of a derivative of Riesling. Dry wine, very, very mineral, nice little citrus. And obviously I was kind of playing off the mandarin there, which is definitely an assertive element of that dish.
Okay, Michael, what was next?
Next, we had a little abalone from the Monterey Bay Abalone Company. It was breaded, lightly fried, sliced, and it was served with a little salad of roasted chanterelle mushrooms, a little poached quail egg, and a little bit of garlic cream.
Oh, so you have these little touches that just make everything pop. You're so talented. Go ahead.
I appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate it.
We went into a little white burgundy next. I like white burgundy and abalone, especially when it's breaded. I think it works well. The chanterelle mushroom also kind of picks up on some of the toastiness of the wood. We had a wine from Bouchard, a Negociant producer in Burgundy. This is their Bon de Chateau. It's a series of Premier Cru vineyards, so it just has kind of the name Bon de Chateau, Premier Cru. It doesn't name a specific vineyard because it's all of their vineyards that are right around their sort of home property in Bon. 2005 vintage. Nice kind of creamy Chardonnay to kind of play off of the stuff going on there with the quail egg and so forth.
I didn't know that there was more than one abalone producer in California.
they're the primary one right now that seems to be kind of at the head of the movement, and which there seems to be a lot more abalone popping up on menus around Northern California. So we try to support them and do various dishes with the abalone.
Great. Next up.
Next up, we had a little very small cannelloni that was filled with freshly picked. We steamed some Dungeness crab, picked the meat.
Oh, that was wonderful. I remember that vividly.
Well, the meat was mixed with a little Meyer lemon zest. We had we reserved the crab butter. We made a little sauce and finished it with a little bit of Bocedra caviar.
Wow.
So that was a nice little pop at the end.
Oh, wow.
I think this was
getting hungry all over again, Michael.
This was a great kind of fusion of what Mike's doing and what I'm doing, in the sense of we had a beautiful domestic Roussan on by the glass, Coupe. The producer, Bob Lindquist, is the winemaker, pretty legendary Santa Barbara winemaker, makes great Syrah as well. And this was a Roussan from Coupe, that a 2007 vintage from the Biendecito Vineyard, and a really, I think in some ways, atypical American white Rhone wine, in the sense that it has a great backbone of acidity and not just the big fat floral kind of element. I just thought with the crab and the Meyer lemon, that little kind of hint of sweetness, I thought the aromatics in that wine were great. That was probably my favorite pairing of the whole meal, actually.
Oh, really?
With one possible exception, just in terms of kind of the synergy I thought was there. Because sometimes, you know, wine pairings are, for me, they're as much about texture as they are trying to hang any certain flavor in the wine on something in the dish. For me, it's mostly about trying to create contrasting textures, trying to use the wine as a foil. But in this instance, I thought not only did it have the right texture for the dish, but it also had some flavors that, particularly with that Meyer lemon kick in there, that were very complimentary.
Well, Evan, I'm always amazed how much you know about all this stuff, David.
No, I've been slinging this BS for years. I just keep talking until people give up, basically. Then they're like, okay, whatever, that's fine, that sounds great.
Okay, so we're still going. Everybody's envious. Go ahead, Michael.
The next course, we make some ricotta in-house, so we made a little fagatelli of ricotta. It's like a little parcel filled with house-made ricotta, a little bit of Parmigiano-Reggiano, and it's made with almost all egg yolk dough, so it's fairly rich, but the filling is a little bit lighter. It kind of has a nice little creaminess to it, so it kind of explodes. It's served with some roasted black trumpet mushrooms, and we had a little final flourish with some calendula flowers from a local farm in across the Golden Gate Bridge in Bolinas.
Wow. And
we circled back to Burgundy here with another bone wine, actually, from Albert Marot, Morot. It was out of a half bottle, if I'm not mistaken. And it was a little 99 Bon Greve from Albert Marot Premier Cru. And this was a texture thing for me. Like, not only the earthiness of Pinot from Burgundy to match up with the mushrooms, but also a nice kind of delicate acidity there. It's not people think of filled pastas as being kind of heavy, ponderous,
right,
which this is most definitely not.
Not.
And so I wanted to kind of keep it light and have that texture, that acidity kind of cut through the ricotta.
Now, this was a red, right? This is a
yes, sir.
This was
red one. Yeah, this was when we turned the corner into Redville at this point.
Okay.
Which is always, you know, eagerly anticipated, but it depends. Like, you know, now we're doing a whole fish and shellfish tasting menu at the restaurant where there's not a red wine to be seen.
Oh, wow.
Okay, yeah, go ahead,
we're
Michael.
We're challenging them a little bit.
Pasta number three.
Okay. You then moved on to another filled pasta. It was a little buckwheat tortelli, basically. The buckwheat dough that we made.
Yeah,
and
I love buckwheat, yeah.
We then boiled a little bit of, it was a Yukon Gold potato at that time. This was in December. We boiled a potato, a little bit of rosemary, then made a little sofrito. In the sofrito, put a little bit of Savoy cabbage, chopped that up, folded that into the base, which was the boiled potato, put some Beto cheese in, and then some pounded black truffle. So we then, that was the filling. And we then served it with some more little slices of black truffle, and a little bit of cabbage on the outside too, and some shards of the Beto.
This was my co-favorite on the pairing thing, because it enables us to kind of talk about Italy and talk about a real regional combination. And this dish is kind of a fine dining take on a very rustic dish from the Valtellina in northern Lombardia called pizzoccheri, which is made with buckwheat flour, and it's normally more like almost like, not pappardelle, but like kind of like sheets of pasta. So anyway, as I was saying, it's a play off of a, this dish is a much more elegantized version of a dish that's served in the Valtellina region of northern Lombardia called pizzoccheri. And it gave me an opportunity to get a little Valtellina wine out there. They're known for wines called Valtellina Superiore, and they are made from the Nebbiolo grape, the same grape that is used in Barolo and Barbaresco wines, but from a much more northerly latitude along beautiful river valley in really the northernmost part of Lombardia, hugging the border with Switzerland. And the wine was from Nino Negri. It's a Valtellina Superiore from the vineyard called Inferno. And it has that great rustic edge. It has that, you know, you taste a wine like that and you know it comes from kind of a mountain locale. It has kind of an edge to it. And I thought the perfect amount of, again, earthiness for this dish that's really kind of with the truffles and the buckwheat dough that really kind of calls for.
Elegant, earthy.
If something earthy can be elegant,
this is it.
Then this is it. Well, I mean, they say the same about Burgundies. And the other thing I love about that wine is that it followed a Burgundy and I thought stood toe-to-toe with it, which I love to do. I like to take on the Burgo files with my Italian Nebbiolo.
You're wicked.
Yeah, well, you know, I like to show that they can get just as good a wine for a third of the price.
Yep, very good. Okay, then.
I knew he was going to steal the show here again.
Not at all. Sorry, Chef. Mm-hmm. This is not the way you're supposed to do it.
Okay, from there we had a little another filled pasta. It was a pozzolatini. It's like a little, basically it's a farce made with squab leg, braised red cabbage, some local chestnuts, and we served that with a little giblet sauce made with the giblets of the squab, and made a little natural sauce with the carcasses of the squab. It was served with a roasted breast that was butterflied of the paint form squab. He's a local producer. I've been buying squabs, the only thing that he raises.
Amazing.
I've been getting, I think, a squab delivery from him for almost every year that I've been, you know, running restaurants in the city. So probably one of my most favorite products to work with. And then we just finished it with a tiny drizzle of some Serrani, aceto balsamico. Actually, it wasn't the Tradizionale. It was the, it says Tradizionale, but I think I finished yours with a little bit of extra vecchio. So,
oh, okay.
A little drizzle of extra vecchio. So you had the, basically you were getting the whole squab, the legs and the thigh, and the tenders were inside the pasta with the red cabbage. And you had the breasts on the outside, the giblets on the outside, and occasionally we'll even serve the head with this one, too. And the chestnuts were also in the filling, and we put a little bit of roasted chestnut on the outside, too.
So your kitchen is very labor-intensive, isn't it?
Yeah, we definitely don't take any shortcuts. This one was, that's probably one of my more favorite dishes. It's been
I
on
loved
menu,
it, yeah.
Menu recently. It's kind of, it's really interesting to kind of look at it. You're eating the whole squab. It's tasty. It's got a lot of different textures going on. You've got the giblets and a little tiny touch of sweetness from the vinegar, and then you got a very savory kind of filling, and then the giblet sauce is savory also, so it's a nice textural and contrast, and it's got a lot of action going on.
Wow. And to drink we had?
You had a Bordeaux. We took you to Bordeaux here. There's not a lot of artisanry on my part here. It's just trying to come strong against a very assertive protein. This is a wine from really the largest chateau in Pomerol, Chateau Dessal, D-E, and then S-A-L-E-S. It's a 2006 vintage Pomerol, Merlot, Cabernet Franc, and Cabernet Sauvignon in that order. Just a big bloody red to take on some swab. Not too much science there. I'd love to make it more romantic, but at the end of the day, it's about just matching, fighting fire with fire, so to speak.
Yeah, well, it was well matched. It held up very well.
Next up, you had a very small portion of your first dried pasta of the night. It was a rigatoni that was from a small producer with basically it was a reduction of with a foie gras sauce that had a little port reduction. We had some little shavings of foie gras on there also. Basically, the sauce is made with a reduction of some chicken stock and cream, and then we finish it with like some foie gras that's been tamed, mixed in with a little bit of butter, and some shallots that have been lightly browned, and then we add a little port in. We fold that into the sauce too, and then we reinvigorate it with a little drizzle of the port reduction on the finish.
Now, what is, when you think of matching wine to that, David, what do you have to counter with?
I mean, here's where I go off the rails, because for whatever reason I didn't have that dish in my notes.
So
if I were pairing it right now with the wine, and perhaps I did this that night too, because I'm kind of a one-note wonder usually, I would probably pair it with a Vin Santo. We do a Vin Santo from Isola Elena, which is one of the great Vin Santo producers there in Chianti Classico. Vin Santo, of course, made from dried white grapes that have been fermented and aged for a very long period in little casks. And so it takes on a little bit of a sherry-ish note, but it's still sweet as well. You know, the foie gras and sweet wine thing, you know, it's not like I came up with that. They've been doing that since the days of, you know, Marie Antoinette. But the thing that's nice about it is that, you know, first of all, that sauce for me is such a nice way to utilize foie. I've never seen that done before.
Oh, I thought it was
such a cool dish, because kind of essentially makes foie accessible to the common man in a lot of ways, and you know, kind of taking it away from that sometimes challenging texture that it can have, but still delivering the flavor and the intensity. So I thought that was, I love that dish, and we have a great time pairing it with all manner of essentially dessert wines, you know, so pulling a dessert wine into a savory preparation is fun, because really they're one of the few wines out there that have the kind of the weight and the intensity to match up with foie. You know, foie is very, very intense.
It is intense, yeah.
I think I actually might have just, you know, thrown that dish on and not had it on the printed on the menu that I gave David, just to kind of tweak him a little in the middle of the circle and kind of see what he was going to come
you
over
with. You guys are so much fun.
We call it wine jazz. Yeah. So, very improvisational.
The a lot of times we'll do that, like David was talking about. Mm-hmm. Instead of port, we'll have a little Vin Santo in the base of the sauce also. But in this version, it had a little bit of the port instead. Moving on here, we finished you up on the savory side of things with the various cuts of the suckling pig. And there's a lot of mushrooms around at the time, so we served it with some hedgehogs and some celeriac, and there may have been a little bit more truffle in the sauce too. But the memory of this meal is starting to fade with time.
Oh, well, dear. I would like to
keep a journal tonight. Next time.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, I hate to say I'm going to have a grilled steak for dinner. I hate it.
I think we had the rack that we served and some wine. We might have had some long-cooked, some belly that was crispy on there too, that was cooked for like 24 hours, and then
have that, yes.
So you had various three or four different cuts. Sometimes we serve the whole animal, so we serve the foot. Sometimes we serve with some suckling sausage, and I think the celery root worked well with some more of the truffle and the earthiness of the mushrooms. And then I'll pass it off to David to remember what he served.
This one I remember well. I wanted to give you a different and perhaps more familiar interpretation of Nebbiolo. This was a Barolo from a producer named Damilano, 2004 vintage. In pairing parlance, I'd just call that a five iron right down the fairway. Not a real, again, not a lot of science or artisanry, but I think probably worked pretty darn well.
Sure did. And?
I think you might have had a...
I don't remember the dessert, to be perfectly...
You might have had the cheese curd come by, but I don't really remember...
I think
that,
I
that,
had
that did occur
cheese. Peter ate, you ate dessert.
I think so, yeah. We wanted to try the cheeses because the cheese curd looks so magnificent.
Yeah.
Well, the cheese curd is the best I've ever seen.
It's really great.
It's run by Katrina Parlato, who's the general manager of the restaurant.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of stuff, not only great local products, often products that are almost if not definitely exclusive to here, but, you know, terrific imported stuff as well.
Now, did we go red or white with the cheese, David? I can't remember.
Neither can I.
You can't remember. You can't remember.
I think my notes, you know, as the night gets on, my notes get, you know, kind of like a wine tasting. Your notes start to look like illegible after wine four.
Well, this is why we didn't do the interview immediately after the dinner.
You know, we typically, one of the tricky parts about having a really big cheese card, and this is an incredibly big cheese card and a very labor-intensive thing to manage, is that you end up with a kind of a stylistic mix that is often, you know, there's not like one wine that you can do that's going to be the perfect wine. I mean, oftentimes we'll default to a port or something sweet just because it's going to kind of hit the most buttons. But at the end of the day, I know Katrina feels the same way. I'm a huge white wine with cheese guy. I love very, very racy white wines, and I'm not afraid to pull someone back after some big reds into some sort of like really, really crisp, you know, even like, you know, Muscadet weight kind of thing, depending on the cheese they have.
Now, did I eat dessert, David? Michael, I think I did.
I think you had two of them.
I probably had two.
It's possible. I think we probably kept it simple on that stuff, probably with like Moscato or Bracchetto at the end.
You know, I don't even remember.
It's been a while now.
David was tasting me in all these wines, you know, at the same time, so it's a nice big blur.
Mike usually needs to approve of the pairing before I enter the dining room. So,
what fun you have, huh?
Yes.
Listeners, if by now you have figured out that this is one of On the Menu's absolutely very favorite dining and wining experiences, the neat part about it is you can share the same experience, right? All you have to do is say, serve me what you like and tell me when I'm finished.
That's what we really, we really love to do that here. And, you know, tasting menus are kind of where we feel that we're kind of doing something special and kind of really kind of practicing our craft, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fun. I mean, you know, obviously recommending a bottle, I mean, in my case, recommending a bottle and opening it and putting it on a table is one thing, but sort of going through this whole process and collaborating with the kitchen and all that, it makes it a heck of a lot more fun to be working the floor.
Now, a couple of days before, at lunchtime, Harvey Steinman from Wine Spectator was in, and he happened to be sitting at the next table to us, and you brought him a very interesting wine.
That was a Cortona.
Which he was kind enough to share with us. Can you remember?
That was a Cortona.
A Cortona, yes. That was a Cigliajolo from Tuscany. See, the memory is not that shot, despite heavy wine consumption on a nightly basis. No, he had a Cigliajolo from Tuscany. It's a native grape, but kind of more typical of the coastal parts of Tuscany. Typically a blending grape, not seen in a varietal form too often. And I believe he blogged about it the day after. He was liking it.
Yeah, well, he shared it with us.
Yeah, can you spell that, David?
Cigliajolo, Cigliajolo, derived from the Italian word for cherry, of course.
Great. Now, I promised you that I would give you a winery name that's 7 kilometers, I think, from the estate that produces Sassicaia.
Okay.
And I never did. And so let's include them in the program, too, because they're nice people that we visited in October. And it's Pavrican Papi.
Okay.
Interesting.
And
the Pavrican is Iranian, and the Papi is Italian.
Right. She's married to...
She's Iranian.
I'm not familiar with the estate. I'll have to go check them out.
Yeah.
It was really interesting.
It's Pakravan-Papi. That should be enough to get you there.
And, okay.
They, interestingly enough, had some kind of original Sangiovese clone.
Mm-hmm.
This from way before they said it was corrupted by the people in the Chianti Hills that they produced the wine from, and a whole range of interesting stuff. So it's the kind of thing, if you haven't come across it, that I think you might be interested in.
Thanks for the hot tip.
Thanks.
All right.
Well, thank you for taking the time to not only present us with this wonderful food and wine at the moment, but also to follow up with us later, as you have done, so that everybody can share in this wonderful, wonderful experience we had.
Well, I appreciate you coming out again, and it's always great to speak to you.
Yes, and you too.
Sorry it took us a little longer than expected.
That's okay, you're busy.
But it's always great to chat, and hopefully we'll see you out in Northern California again pretty soon.
Yeah, great.
So the weather's a little bit better here than it is, I guess, where you are.
really nice, actually.
Best wishes.
We don't want to rub it in that it's about 65 and their spring crops are like popping up already out here.
Please don't do that, Michael.
I have to conclude with another note, because I remember when we were at the Old Quince, Katrina, I think, took care of us that evening.
Correct.
And she's now the general manager of Quince, and the service is absolutely wonderful.
Excellent. Yeah, Katrina's the general manager of both of
both
restaurants,
places.
So she kind of scoots back and forth between all of them, and she's been with us for like probably about 8 years.
Okay.
So we go way back with her. So we appreciate all that she's done to keep the restaurant intact.
We're gonna see you at some award ceremonies again, I feel sure, in the near future. David and Michael, thank you so much. Give our best regards to Katrina and also to Lindsay.
I appreciate it. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, as the little Tweety Bird says in the cartoon, that's all for now, folks. We'd be happy to, if you'll join us again, same time, same place next week. And be sure to put Quince and Cotonia on your dining list close to the top when you're in San Francisco. If not, probably at the top, wouldn't you think, sweetheart?
Yeah, I love the place. Made me want to jump on a plane and go right back. And someday, hopefully, we'll get Lindsay tasked, who's shy, but she does a fabulous job.
Well, they say she's shy, and we asked her, is she shy? And she said yes, and we asked Michael, is she shy? And he said no, I'm the shy one, so who knows the answer? David Lynch certainly isn't shy, but he's a superstar in the world of wine, and it was a delight to spend time with both of them and have such a wonderful time at their fine dining establishments. Right, sweetheart?
Yes. And anyhow, next week, same time, same place. And until then,
bye-bye.